world is careening towards the year 2024. This calendar is the one that the world goes by. I know it's not necessarily how we might plan our lives, because generally speaking, we kind of like to plan our lives around the spring and the fall holy days, and that's good. And some of you may be asking, why have you been talking about the year 2024 so much in the last 3 weeks? And the answer is pretty simple, so I'll disclose that to you. The leaders of this earth plan by this calendar. They have no idea about your calendar. They have no idea about your holy days or any things that you're doing, but they do plan according to the Julian calendar. What is it, Julian, Gregorian, whatever, I guess it's Julian. They do plan their lives and plan our lives by this calendar, and that's the most important thing to consider, in that, you know, even though we're in the dead of winter, it's not the new beginning of the year, it's not that, but that's what they think. And so this is not God's world yet, and so we must understand and think like those that are ruling this world, because that is how they orchestrate their plans. Now, only time will tell if their plans are going to be successful. Well, they are going to be successful, because that's what Bible prophecy shows. The world that the leaders of this world have planned are going to come to fruition. The only question is how much of it is going to come to fruition in 2024, because I can tell you this, surely a lot of their plans have come to pass in 2023. And then in 2022 and 2021 and 2020, when the world really did change. And I think we'll all look back, even doubters, probably look back and see that as a seminal year of change, the year of COVID and beyond that point. My purpose today is to inform you of an important responsibility that I believe that we all share as we near the end of this calendar year. But before I share that purpose with you, which is shared between all of us in this room and all of you out in webcast land and those of you out in El Paso, before I specify that purpose, I'm going to use just one example and try not to get hung up in it too much. As to the leaders of this world and their plans and what is happening, and one thing that is a fulfillment of their plans, I'm going to use that as an illustration that the leaders of this world are hurtling towards this time frame and the things that they have planned out in advance and that they want to achieve. Now, whether they will accomplish a lot more of it in 2024 remains to be seen. But they do have plans. I'm going to talk about an example of a dramatic change that is sweeping across this world, and especially sweeping across, for the most important point, sweeping across this nation. Now, I would venture to say that it probably hasn't affected your life specifically that much, but it is poised to. You're aware of it, probably. I have mentioned it a number of times, and that's not the reason that you're aware of it necessarily. You've heard a little bit of it. I'm not sure what your news media sources are, but let's cite this. If you're necessarily watching local news, that's okay. I mean, that's fine. I'm not talking about. But if you're watching Fox, CNN, CBS, NBC, ABC, the big three, MSNBC, CNBC, those are the various sources that are the biggest providers of news services. And most of them are, when you get down to the end, most of them are owned by the same entities. Investment houses that are super rich with trillions. They are publicly traded companies. And so even though one is supposed to represent a, quote, conservative point of view, they're all owned by the same entities. I mean, so they're basically, you know, we've got a catchphrase now in the Church of God, United Church of God, speaking the same thing. The news media speaks the same thing. Basically, minor differences. So if you're relying on that for your news, you're not going to really hear a lot of this because they're not going to be highlighting it, because the same people that own those entities are the same people that I talked about are the leaders that are hurtling us towards this new world. And it's probably, some of it is going to be accomplished in the next year. So here is one example, just to illustrate the shared responsibility that we have, one example of something that is possibly a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. And I say that because, you know, some of these things, maybe you know, maybe you're pretty certain, but this is an obscure prophecy in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 43. It's somewhat obscure, but it may be the beginning and it may be the continuing fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Deuteronomy 28 is called, along with Leviticus 26, the blessing and cursings chapter. It was given to the ancient nation of Israel before they entered into the promised land, and the first portion, maybe first third of each of those chapters, show what's going to happen to you if you obey God. You know, what's going to happen if you obey God? You're going to have blessings beyond belief. But what's going to happen to you if you don't obey God? It's not going to go well for you. It's not that God is angry and wrathful for not obeying him. It's just that these are the natural consequences of disobedience to God. So you can review both of those chapters, but this is just one verse in the chapter, and it's obscure, I'll admit. And I'm going to read from the New American Bible. You may have on the screen, you may have the New King James Version, but this is the New American Bible. The resident aliens among you will rise above you higher and higher while you sink lower and lower. And they will lend to you, not to them. They will become the head and you the tail. Now, whether our situation currently in the United States is a direct fulfillment of that, let's admit it, one line, somewhat obscure, if that is a fulfillment of prophecy, it remains to be seen. But this one thing is clear, because we have the testimony of Homeland Security Director Alejandro Mayorkas, who testified recently before Congress, and he said that we do not have a border crisis. We don't have a border crisis, he said. And in his view, there's no border crisis. Now, recently, they backtrack on that and say, yeah, we got an issue at the border, and we got to fix this or that. It's a whitewash of the whole situation. But no, there's no border crisis. There's no border security problem in the United States at our southern border. No, but according to that point of view, there's not. And I agree with them because I understand them and I understand their plans for this nation. There is no border crisis. There's no security crisis. Do you know why? There's no border. There's no border. There used to be a border. There used to be a border between the United States and Mexico, but it doesn't exist. If you have that mindset, and if you understand that this is the plan, and it's been the plan for a long time, then you realize that, yeah, it's working out perfectly. Now, I mentioned this, and I've got a future article that I'm working on now, but I met with a fairly highly ranked regional Border Patrol official that I just kind of by happenstance, a friend introduced me to this person. They wanted to remain anonymous, met them in a local hotel, spoke with them for over an hour, and asked what was going on. I did this several months ago. He's close to retirement age in that area, and most of the departments, Homeland Security, Border Patrol, are 57. He's 53, hoping to, you know, get it to his retirement age. So we spoke. He disclosed a lot of things to me. I think I even sent a picture out of three small children, all siblings, that were unaccompanied as a type of the many that have come to this nation. Little kids, no parents with them, sitting, you know, by the highway. It's heartbreaking. They've been by the thousands. But according to his testimony, and according to the director, Mayorkas, we don't have a problem, although he also testified that to Congress that they've lost track of 85,000 unaccompanied minors. And what do you suppose has happened to all of those children that have come into this nation? You shudder to think about the potential possibilities. The United States, as well as some parts of Europe and Great Britain, of course, as well, are under attack. It's war, because it's an invasion. And not only are illegal aliens not being stopped, they're being welcomed. And it's sad in some cases. Now, who is coming across? Let me backtrack just a bit. Since January 2021, the estimates on the number of illegal immigrants coming across ranges from, at the low end estimate of 15 million, that's 15 Tucson's, by the way, to 25 million, or 25 Pima County populations coming into this nation. And nobody really knows, because these are the only ones that have been counted. You don't know the ones that have come in places where, you know, you just don't know. It's like fentanyl, how much fentanyl comes across, enough to kill every man, woman, and child in the United States. It comes from China. It's being trafficked into this nation. If you can't see the destruction and the planned destruction of our nation, then you're not awake. Or, you know, you're living way out in the middle of nowhere. You know, good for you. But it's happening. So, who are these folks that are coming across? Well, we do know this. They're coming from virtually every nation in the world. Over 170 nations they've counted. So, who are they? Well, many are, like I mentioned, unaccompanied children, 85,000 missing, but there's many more than that that have come across. Many are single men. You can see the caravans. You can see, you know, they're almost walking in regiment style. Somalis, Venezuelans, people from the Middle East, people from the Far East, people from China. Why people are leaving China, who knows? There are a few families, but the news sources generally are not, that maybe most of you have access to, are generally not reporting this, but some are. Real America's Voice is one. Ben Bergstrom is an incredible journalist. He's in Tucson. He's in South Texas. He's in California. He's in Yuma. Oh, by the way, I wanted to welcome all of the brethren from Yuma who are watching in today as well, and a good friend, Randy Love. So hi to those of you. And you, of course, are right on the border, and you know exactly what I'm speaking of, those of you. Now, not many of the illegal immigrants are staying in Yuma. They're, what happens to them? I'm going to explain in just a second. This is fascinating in a sense. As I said, it's not that our government is just incapable of stopping them. They're not trying. The Border Patrol official that I spoke to said, we have all been ordered to get our commercial driver's license. He says, we have become taxi cab drivers. You see these white buses on the highway, unmarked. Those are government buses. 100% of the time, they are transporting illegal aliens who have been, have not been stopped, not been vetted, not been anything, but most of the time they're given money in the form of a debit card. Sometimes those are reloadable, a cell phone, where they can be got in contact with or tracked. They're given a plane ticket or a bus ticket to wherever they want. Ben Bergstrom was here about a month ago, and one of these buses pulled up to the airport fresh from the border. They brought about 60 young men, come out, all men, and they're going into Tucson International Airport, and they're being taken away. The Andersons mentioned on a recent trip that they saw families, obviously very confused, not speaking English, but they have their documents from the Homeland Security, and they ask, you know, they don't know where they're going, they can't speak English, they can't read English. Many times they're frightened. Why are they here? Why are they here? It's sad to see some of these where people are in train stations and bus stations and airports, and they have these placards, you know, that Chicago or Atlanta, Fort Worth, Utah, Salt Lake City, and that's where they're being dispersed throughout the country. Since they're being given money and phones and travel documents to help them get there, you can't say it's happenstance. It's not an accident. It is planned. That's why I say these things are planned. What is happening in our nation today is planned. It's not just some accidental happenstance. It is a plan. So illegal aliens are not stopped. They're housed, they're fed, they're taken all over the country. Some are scared, some are frightened. I saw some, I'm certain, in our local Walmart a couple of months ago, several young Chinese men, both about 30, they look like they're on a mission. You know, when I shop, I'm very much militaristic. I don't look, I'm on a mission. But I can spot other people on a mission as well. They were there for a purpose. I've got my list, I do this, there's no waste of time, boom. They were the same way. But who knows why they're here. So the faucet has been turned on, there's no end in sight. There are endless, and I mean endless, caravans coming. They arrive in Panama, a place called the Darien Gap. It's jungle, it's forested, but they arrive there. There's the Highway 1 that goes all the way from Canada all the way down to Central America, stops there, and that's where they come into the forest, into the area of a very, very dense tropical area, and then they make their way up. Now, what will be the result? If you think about it, now, if you don't believe me, you can research this. I mean, hey, anybody, please challenge me. Challenge me on this, either here, on tape later, you know, just call me a nut, I don't care. But what will be the result of this never-ending flood of immigration? Because if you just think about the implications of 30 to 40 to 100 million to 200 million, where does it end? Now, if you're very sincere person from the third world and you're given money and you're given the promise of a new life and all you've ever seen about America is an America that shows endless wealth and endless possibilities, you can understand somebody wanting to escape poverty or escape torture or escape prison or whatever it is, right? Because their idea of America is that, you know, it's just like Disneyland every day. But what will the effect of that? Because you and I all know that there's not an endless supply of money, even though that's not true according to the Federal Reserve, because they can print as much as they want. But eventually, it comes home to roost, right? What will be the implication of 30, 40, 100, 200, 300 million immigrants roaming our nation in search of food, in search of housing, once the government giveaway programs fail? It's a potential possibility. Senator Durbin from Illinois said, hey, a great idea. Let's let them serve in the armed services because we can't fulfill our quotas anymore. People don't want to go into the armed services after the last 3 years. They don't want to be sent off to these endless wars. Good idea, brilliant. Let's let all of these people who are that age, military age, let them enroll in our military. Hey, great, brilliant. Also, it's been suggested that, look, they should be eligible to become policemen. Oh, that's brilliant too. Wow, what a great idea. What could go wrong? What possibly could go wrong than to have non-citizens armed and patrolling our streets and doing the will of the Constitution of the United States or whoever else. So there is a real crisis, but again, it's not the topic for the discussion today. Let's review once again a passage that I've used the last 3 weeks, Matthew 24 and verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached throughout all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Okay, so certainly we've always understood this passage as a responsibility given to the people of God. There is good news coming. There is really, really good news coming, but it won't be good news to the leaders of this world who have had their own satanically designated future for mankind are put down. The satanic plan for this world includes massive starvation through famine, pestilence, wars, and then even more horrific wars. So yes, that's not the good news, but it's going to be short. But that is what the leaders, satanically inspired of this world, have planned for all the rest of us, because they think there's too many of us. So let me ask this question to you before I get into this shared responsibility that we have, and the main purpose of the message today as we close out the year 2024. Let me ask you this question. Does anyone doubt we have moved into a new age of decadence and immorality? Does anyone doubt that it hasn't sped up to a great degree when recently we have found out that our children in schools are being taught, not every school, of course, and maybe yours is not, and your homeschooled kids, it doesn't apply, but just think about the magnitude of many public schools teaching that two men can have a baby. Oh yes, two men easily can have a baby, that's biologically possible. What about the drag queen story times where you've got these perverse men dressing up as women, teaching sexuality, and if you've seen the videos of the public libraries and school libraries in which this is done, for those of us that are baby boomers and older than that, and maybe even Gen X and Y and Z, it is shocking to see the rapid change that has taken place in our society. Now, mind you, I'm not implicating the general populace because, as I'll mention a little bit later in the message today, before we close, when I first came into the church, here's the attitude that we had. It's us versus them out there. We're called, you're not. They're outsiders. They're unconverted. And it's no wonder that, you know, we weren't ready yet to accept the responsibility I'm going to suggest to you today that we share. And if there are remnants of the attitude that I'm describing now that are still there, you got to get rid of that. You've got to put that away. And I'm going to explain why from the Bible. You've got to put that mentality of us versus them out. You've got to put away the idea and the thinking that the vast numbers of society are the decadent ones. Or even if there are some decadent ideas and morality within the general populace, maybe those individuals can be warned. And yes, even saved. We've got to have that mentality before we can move forward in this shared responsibility. So hopefully no one questions the premise that I've set out for you, that there's a lot of things that are really bad that people have woken up to that see what is happening within society. Hideous things that are happening, as a matter of fact. Illegal immigration is one of it, and what's being done to some of those people is absolutely horrific. But today, we're blessed. We're still protected to a certain degree, and maybe we're oblivious to it. It's my job to tell you that you shouldn't be oblivious. But there are crimes against humanity that are carried out by the leaders of this world, all brought to you by the sponsor, Satan. He's the author of all of it. In Luke 17 and verse 26, let's revisit this passage here before I get to this real main shared responsibility. Luke 17 and verse 26, it says, "And as it was in the days of Noah, so it will also be in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all." And the way that that is written has led some people to say that, oh, you see, that's why there's Matthew 25 and five virgins that are asleep and five that are awake, because life is just going to go on as normal. Life is just, and then all of a sudden, people are going to be unaware because, you know, things have just gone on like normal. No! That's not the answer. Do you realize the days of Noah were the most violent in the history of mankind? That's why a flood had to be brought. It's not life as usual. When Christ is describing the times of Noah, yeah, all these things will be going on, but it's going to be radical. It's going to be violent. And that is the future for mankind. It was so bad that civilization had to be closed down and begun anew. So we are headed to a crescendo of events, and I don't care if that's gloom and doom in your head, you better get used to it, because it's going to be the reality in the lives of many people on this earth. We are heading into a cascade of events that include the planned destruction. Planned how? By war. Wars are planned. There are reasons. When all else fails and the currency fails, the economy fails, nations go to war to cover it all up. The end is by planned disease. No doubt in my mind, the pandemic was a planned event. You can trace it all back. You got all the receipts now. You trace it all back. You even know the individuals from who started it. There's no doubt about that. It's not an arguable question. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's been proven. What should you do to prepare? Okay, let's head in. Second part of the message today. Let's head in. There is a way to oppose this ungodly dystopian future that these leaders have planned for you. There's a way that you can prepare for it. Would you like to know what that is? But first, let's take a look at the planned future for this world. Deliberate. In evaluating Bible prophecy, I do admit that I did not know way back when these things weren't as prevalent. I thought, you know, this is just going to be organic, you know, it's just going to be kind of like gradual escalation of this and that, and you know, a few things that happened according to Matthew 24 and the Olivet prophecies. Come to realize it's deliberate. And the thing that prevents, when I say you, I'm talking about the ubiquitous you, not you individually, okay? The thing that prevents you from accepting that reality is that you have a normalcy bias and that you project your own good nature to other folks. Because you cannot imagine individuals that would plan death, plan destruction, plan disease, and plan war for the detriment of mankind. It's almost something that does not compute, especially to the converted mind and to most other people as well, who are good people. So you have a normalcy bias, you project, and you think, who could do these things? Well, let me enlighten you. It is planned. Men have their plans. Satan has his plan, and it is a joint operation. It is very easy to prove biblically. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13. But evil men and imposters will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. They're going to deceive themselves in a while. They're going to be deceived by Satan the devil. And there's a reason for that.
Evil men do this. They plan it. They're following instruction from their master, the God of this world. And how do they do that? Ephesians. There's not a second Ephesians, is there? No. Ephesians 2, that's what I meant, the second chapter of Ephesians. Ephesians 2, verses 2 through 3, in which you once, okay, stop right there, in which you once, everybody, all of us who were called, we were subject to this impulse because we were in this world. Not as much, probably most of you had a moral base. You had parents that taught you right and wrong. And so you were not as subject to the motivational attitude of this wrongful spirit. But we're all part of it. We didn't know any better. I didn't. I don't know anybody that did. So we can't have the holier-than-thou attitude of us versus them, you see. Because we were there once. So remember that for just a little bit later. According to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. So the people who are the masters, the orchestrators, the planners of this world's activities, taking us to their dystopian future and their viewpoint, are people who are anti-God, anti-law, don't believe in God, don't believe in morals, and are subject, because of that, that influence has a greater effect on their minds. And so they're urged forward by that, continually urged to go in that direction of anti-law and anti-God, among whom we also once conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. So we've got to cut people slack, because it could have been us. So what we see today is the result of well-executed plans. You don't have millions of people come into your country and are immediately given cell phones and debit cards and have concierge service transportation of their luggage, because all of them are just wearing backpacks, but they've got other luggage, believe me, given to them if it's not well-planned and orchestrated from the beginning. And it has been. They've got non-governmental organizations. They're not just doing this out of the goodness of their heart, Catholic Charities and all the rest that's set up in South Texas, here in Tucson, facilitating all of these things. And where does the money come from? It comes from us. We're funding it. The national government of the United States is funding all of this. It comes from you. You can easily research it if you don't believe me. It's a planned demolition of this nation. And why would the leaders of this world want to demolish their own country? Just give you three words. Follow the money. The leaders are well compensated for their efforts, because there's one thing that stands in the way. There's one thing that stands in the way of a complete takedown of this world, and that is the United States. And that is why we are seeing a planned demolition of our society and chaos that is taking place with people that don't know our language and people that will never assimilate, and that's already happened in Europe and many of the Western European nations. And of course, they're even dumber than we are, because they have these great social programs that people go into their nations, and it began a long time ago in places like France and Belgium, where these people hole up in their apartments and they never have a job. They're coming from the Middle East, or they're coming from various areas, and they set up their communities in which the police of Belgium and France and Germany are afraid to go in there. They can't patrol them. They take their lives in their hands if they go. They have their own little police forces. Look, this is all planned. It didn't happen by accident. So what we see is a well-executed, demonically ingenious plan that are orchestrated by the men who are the architects for the change for mankind. And as long as the United States remains free, with all its values of free speech, all its values of innocent until proven guilty. And of course, that's going away, right? You see that? That's going away. That's also planned and orchestrated. But when you see the morals that are so skewed and far away from God and his purpose, it's not a coincidence. The result is even more and more wickedness and evil on a scale that we have never seen before. So how do you combat it? Well, you remember Matthew 24 and verse 14. This is the reality that you have a part in the completion of the proclaiming of good news, that this is all coming to an end. A screeching halt at Jesus Christ's return. And that's where you come in. That's where all of us come in, as a shared responsibility. So let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 34. Let's go through just a few verses, the first part of this particular chapter. And I want to remind you of a shared responsibility that we have, and it was given to Ezekiel. And in Ezekiel, we'll pick up the story in Ezekiel chapter 2 and verse 3. He said to me, "Son of man, I am sending you to the children of Israel." That is Ezekiel. He was a prophet. He was of the priestly class. He became a prophet. Where is he going to go? To a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day. Who's he talking about? Israel. We'll be going into that in January. Who is Israel? Ezekiel, the poor guy, he was given an impossible task. Why? Ezekiel, remember, was a contemporary like Daniel. He was a prophet of the Babylonian captivity. He was Jewish. He was from the southern kingdom. His nation went into captivity from 604 to 585 or so. Waves of deportation. You know, back in those days, it wasn't like, you know, massive immigration influx. It was like, okay, we defeated you. We're taking every one of you out of this land. And they did. And it took them all to Babylon to be slaves. A few got some cushy jobs like Daniel and his buddies. But they stood up for God, right? But Ezekiel was taken to Babylon, they think about 597 B.C. But the thing to remember, and I know most of you know this, but for those of you that may not, I'm just going to recite, and you get a little repetition every so often, right, at services. The nation that he was supposed to go to had been carried away into a separate captivity 120 years earlier, to Assyria. Those people were gone. There's no way he could fulfill his assignment. So the thought is that much of this prophecy of Ezekiel and his warnings remain unfulfilled. Now, I'm sure that he was able to go, you know, he went to various places that he was sent to, that non-biblical sources indicate that. He was responsible for, you know, maybe a great deal, but much of it remains to be completed, the job. So let's continue in Ezekiel 33 and verse 2. Son of man, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when I bring a sword upon the land and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sound comes and takes him away, his blood shall be in his own head. Kind of makes sense. There's a warning. I don't believe it. It's not going to happen to me. Okay, you've been warned. The watchman of the land was a huge responsibility. I mean, it required bravery. I think we can see that. I think you can understand that you'd have to be, oh boy, you'd have to be brave. You'd have to have a lot of discernment. You'd have to be very alert, right? You'd have to be watching yourself so intently. And you know what else you'd need? If you're chosen to be the watchman for the people, let's say your community, you're set up on a tower, you're looking out over the, you're looking for advancing hordes of armies or whatever, you got to sound the warning, you got to blow the trumpet. You'd have to have a lot of love you'd have to have a lot of outgoing concern for your fellow man as well. You really would. Maybe more love than anything else. Verse 5, he heard the sound of the trumpet, but he didn't take the warning. The blood shall be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. Not everyone's going to listen. God told Ezekiel, not everybody's going to listen, but some will. But if the watchman, verse 6, sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I'll require to watchman's head. Aha, it's your responsibility. You dropped the ball. You were told to do something, and you didn't do it. Now, God called Jonah to warn Nineveh, and he didn't want to go. Mr. Horchak covered that in a Bible study a few months ago. But God made sure he fulfilled his role. And the people were saved for a number of years in Nineveh because they did repent. Verse 7 of Ezekiel 33. So you, son of man, I've made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore, you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. And when I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die. And you do not speak to warn the wicked from the way that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Ooh, that is huge. Being responsible for the lives of people. Even the wicked deserve to be warned. Did you understand that? Even the wicked deserve a warning. Because they're going to be deceived. May not be their choice to be wicked originally. They need to be told they're wicked. Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn his way, he will die in his wicked iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. You've done your part. You've done the best you can. It's up to him now. Verse 10, therefore, O son of man, say to the house of Israel, thus, you say, if our transgressions and our sins be upon us, and we came away in them, how can we then live? So say to them, as I live, says the Lord God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn from your evil ways, for why should you die, O house of Israel? That's the job. Now the rest of this, the rest of his commission is it detailed in the rest of the chapter. I'm not going to go through the entire chapter, but basically it's summed up like this, and you can figure this out on your own. If someone becomes wicked, his previous righteousness is not going to save him. You know, you were good at one time, and then at the end you're bad. No, you're going to be punished. If the wicked repents, he will be delivered. So that's what the rest of the chapter says. And then we move on to chapter 34, because those most culpable for the decline of the house of Israel are now mentioned. And I want to give you a little clue. Just because the word shepherd is mentioned here, it's not the ministry. It's the leaders of society, not just elected leaders, but that would include them in our democratically elected society. It's also the people who are part of plans that shape plans. And there are a lot of people that are unelected that shape plans. In fact, probably we'll find out that this to be more true than anything else. The ones who are the real orchestrators in the plans of the demise of our world today are unelected individuals. But in chapter 34, verse 1, and the word of the Lord came to me saying, son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. And say to them, thus says the Lord God to the shepherds, woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Follow the money. Okay, so the federal government buys all these buses up, and they buy them up from private contractors. They paint them white. They transport and they do all these things that are against our Constitution. But you know, they're paying off these people, and you know, everybody has their hand in the till. In the local hotels, there are about six or seven of them in Tucson that are now basically kind of short-term housing for illegal aliens. the hotel going to turn down the revenue? The federal government is probably a pretty good payer, pays on time. No, probably has a contract with them. They're not going to turn down the money. There's money going everywhere, and people are benefiting. This is an indictment against the leaders of the nation who do not protect it from the danger that is coming. Follow the money. That's the reason why. Verse 3, you eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fatlings, but don't feed the flock. You're not taking care of your own people. And this does have a lot to do with many of our elected leaders. They know what I know. They know what you know. They know what is happening at the border. You know, they had these flimsy reasons to indict and to impeach one president, kept trying to do it and nothing sticks, and now they have plenty of evidence and they can't get it done, or they refuse to do it, or they stall. And why do they stall? Follow the money. There's not going to be a way to elect anybody out of this. There's not going to be any salvation in that regard. So sadly to say, I mean, unless a miracle happens and there's a short-term remedy, that's possible. But the weak you've not strengthened. Look, we've got homeless veterans who serve their country that aren't treated as well by our government as people that we didn't know. Living on the streets. No health care. You can't make this stuff up. The weak you've not strengthened, nor have you healed those who are sick, nor bound up the broken, nor brought back what was driven away, nor sought what was lost, but with force and cruelty you have ruled them. If this is not a window into the present day, then I don't know what could be. So they were scattered because there is no shepherd, and they became food for the beasts of the field. This is not literal. This is metaphorical. This is the destruction of a society. My sheep wandered through the mountains and on every high hill. Yes, my flock was scattered all over the whole face of the earth, and no one was seeking or searching for them. Where's the blame go? Where's most of the culpability? We used to say, oh, it's all these people out here. Oh, they disobey God, blah, blah, blah. No, it's upon the leadership. Sure, we all have our shared responsibility of doing wrongdoing. But again, we've got to get away from this holier-than-thou attitude of, you know, we're so much better than the other common guy across the street having a drink now with his lunch in the bar, listening to the loud music that sometimes filters over here. They're scattered. The greatest indictment, and not that everybody's not responsible for their own actions, but the greatest indictment is against those who rule and take advantage of their rule to oppress the governed. Unfortunate. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. Verse 8, as I live, says the Lord God, surely because my flock became a prey and my flock became food for every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, nor did my shepherd search for my flock, but the shepherds fed themselves and did not feed my flock. Therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord, for thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will require my flock at their hand, and I will cause them to cease feeding the sheep, and the shepherds shall feed themselves no more. For I will deliver my flock from their mouths, that they may no longer be food for them. They're taking advantage of the blessings of the people of Abraham. This and many other passages that I could clearly single out, or that I could show you clearly, single out the leaders of our nations, sometimes elected officials in today's world, but also others who are in positions of power and influence. Now, when we read in Revelation 3 the description of the Philadelphia church, in Revelation, specifically in Revelation 3 and verse 7, it shows us a church that Jesus is pleased with, because the name implies brotherly love. If you have a zeal of a watchman and you have brotherly love to preach the good news of God's kingdom, you are truly a Philadelphian. You fall into that category if you have that zeal and enthusiasm and if you understand your role. Many years ago, some felt a distance from those outside the fellowship of the Church of God. If you weren't here, you were an outsider. You were a non-believer or an unbeliever. We had labels. Totally unfortunate. That was misguided zeal. Misguided. Some of you around, you remember it. You know, I'm not making this up. That's the past. The future of the Philadelphia era of the Church of God is one that has deep love for their fellow man, who see the problems coming as a watchman and want to warn as many people as possible. That's the main goal, folks. That's the main job going forward. Someone who says, "There but for the grace of God go I." Because they recognize that Ephesians 2, verses 1 through 2 is true, that we were in that same boat. This passage also shows the intersection of the watchman and the Philadelphian. Revelation 3 and verse 7, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts and shuts and no one opens. I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door and no one can shut it, for you have a little strength, have kept my word and have not denied my name." What does that all mean? Well, I think BibleHub.com has it pretty accurate here, because it says in Revelation 3 and verse 8, the open door refers to the enjoyment of some privilege and honor. It may refer to the ability to do good, represented as the opening of a door. Hey, let me get the door for you. Get it? Let me open this door for you. The one who holds David's key has absolute and unchallenged authority. So I don't care about the evilness of Satan, the evilness of this world, the diabolical plans that are set in motion, and it is planned, the wars, the disease epidemics, it's a plan. It's being executed very well. The one who holds David's key has absolute unchallenged authority, and where he gives permission, no one can prevent it or shut that door. The open door also refers to the opportunity to proclaim and diffuse God's word, which none of the adversaries can prevent. Herbert Armstrong was a genius, because he also, long before BibleHub.com tumbled to it and other commentaries, he always said that it meant an open door to proclaim the good news of God's kingdom. When all of this hellishness is done away with and all of this perverseness is extinguished forever, when all of this anti-God attitude is done away, when Jesus Christ returns. And this explanation squares with our understanding of preaching to the people of this world as an act of love, an act of bravery, an act of diligence, an act of discernment, not correction. That's up to God. Acting on God's behalf to be a watchman and to help open the door to salvation.